today, responding to a global health emergency. The world began 2020 gripped to news from China as a new virus took hold in a place called Wuhan in Hubei province. This coronavirus, which we now call COVID-19, made global headlines daily as experts struggled to understand how it spread and how deadly it might be. But there have been no easy answers, and many questions about the potential impact of the virus remain. So, what have we learned from watching the spread of COVID-19 so far? And has Australia taken the right action to contain it? I'm Gabrielle Jackson, and this is The Full Story.
Well, I've been reporting on this every day on The Guardian's live blog coverage of the coronavirus for just coming up to 3 weeks now.
Alison Rourke works as an editor on The Guardian's foreign desk in Sydney.
And I've been completely immersed in facts and figures and trying to get my head around what actually is happening.
Throughout most of the outbreak, as you say, we've been referring to it as a novel coronavirus or simply as a coronavirus. But we've suddenly started calling it COVID-19. Why is that?
Yeah, you're right, Gabs. We have been talking about it as the coronavirus. Now it officially has a name. It's called COVID-19, and the World Health Organization gave it that name on Tuesday. Just to break that down a little bit, the CO is for corona, the V is for virus, the D is for disease, and the 19 is for the year that it started. There are actually some quite strict rules about naming viruses. They used to often be associated with a place where they started. You might have heard of the Spanish flu or the Asian flu. But there's been a move to try and get away from that because it may cause a stigma with those places. So we haven't called it the Wuhan flu or the Chinese flu. That's why they've given it this name, to avoid any kind of discrimination, perhaps against people from Wuhan. But it's a name I think we'll hear for a long time, COVID-19.
平时反正出去的时候要做好防护，然后像口罩什么一定要戴好，做好防护，然后去人多的地方。Ali, when did COVID-19 first emerge?
Chinese health authorities are still working to identify the virus behind a pneumonia outbreak in the central city of Wuhan. According to authorities, the number of cases has increased to 44, with 11 of them in serious condition.
Hong Kong reported two more cases linked to Wuhan flu, bringing the city's total cases to 5.
We now know that the first cases of COVID-19 were discovered in Wuhan in China on around the 12th of December.
Following up on investigations into a viral pneumonia outbreak in central China, authorities in Wuhan have ordered a local seafood market with apparent connections to the outbreak to shut down. The market is located in a heavily populated area, not far from one of the city's busiest train stations.
We know, or we believe, that the virus emanated from the seafood market in Wuhan.
Barricaded and guarded by police with masks, Chinese authorities have traced a new deadly virus back to this seafood market in the city of Wuhan. They say a new strain of coronavirus originated here has struck dozens of people and put an entire region on edge.
It wasn't reported then. It wasn't reported by China to the World Health Organization until the 31st of December. And after China reported the first initial cases of what they saw this virus was, they shut the market. And that market's been closed since the 1st of January.
So what happened next?
Well, the virus obviously started to develop and more people were identified as having it, but it actually wasn't identified as a coronavirus, now called COVID-19, until the 7th of January.
What we've got so far is we know that the pneumonia outbreak is linked to this new type of coronavirus in the same family as SARS and MERS. Does that concern you?
It's a very common type of viruses, and quite a few species in this family cause common respiratory tract infections.
A coronavirus is a virus that actually originates from animals.
It's a family of viruses that cause diseases varying in severity, from the common cold to the deadly severe acute respiratory syndrome, better known as SARS, that broke out in 2002, infecting thousands of people in China.
But crucially, with this virus, it's a new type of virus. You might have heard referred to as the novel coronavirus. And it's called that because it's new. We haven't seen it before. And one of the things that comes with that is that we currently don't have any treatment for it.
As of today, one person has died, seven are in critical conditions, while two have now recovered.
First death from the virus was actually on the 11th of January. It was a 61-year-old man who had been to the seafood market in Wuhan.
Was said to be a regular visitor to a seafood market linked to the outbreak. The man also suffered from abdominal tumours and chronic liver disease.
And then the first case outside China was reported on the 13th of January.
The Philippines has reported the first death from the new coronavirus outside of China. Officials in Manila say the 44-year-old man came from the province of Wuhan, the Chinese province hardest hit by the outbreak. The death toll in China has now topped 300.
So it was really, it started to develop in sort of in our news cycle and people became aware of it sort of by mid-January.
As the number of cases there continues to grow, factories have gone into overdrive to meet the demand for medical supplies.
And then it spread to South Korea, Japan, US.
And for the first time, confirmation that this respiratory virus can be passed from person to person.
So we've had the first cases outside China. We now know it can spread from one human to another and deaths are rising. All the world's eyes are on China.
Mm-hmm.
What do they do?
We were getting daily figures of new cases and also of new deaths. And for China, it's the middle of January. The Lunar New Year holiday is going to start on the 25th of January.
This week, China becomes a nation in motion as people travel home to mark the new Lunar New Year.
And this is a time where hundreds of millions of Chinese go home. It's a huge, huge holiday in China and also elsewhere in Chinese communities around the world. That was looking like a critical point.
But many are also travelling overseas. And from Wuhan, it's now possible to fly to 40 international destinations, which is why, say some experts, this outbreak is going to be more than just China's problem.
So what the Chinese authorities did was they imposed a travel ban on the city of Wuhan, where the first cases were reported. It's a huge city, 11 million people. That was on the 23rd of January. Now, interestingly, people knew that it was going to be imposed, and we understand that up to 5 million people may have left the city to go on their Chinese New Year holidays, which could account for the spread of the virus, but that was a really pivotal point in terms of trying to control its spread.
Okay, so China has shut down Wuhan. It's stopped Lunar New Year festivities. What is happening in the rest of the world?
Once the world started to see that there was potentially a big problem and China was acting in a big way to shut down lunar festivities, some countries started to introduce screening at airports. The US was one of the first to do that. They did that in three major airports, including in LA and New York. That was on the 17th of January that came into force. Countries like Australia followed suit fairly quickly. I think it was the following week. And that screening meant passengers' temperatures were tested if they showed symptoms, and they were given information about what to do if they thought they had symptoms of this virus. But by the 25th of January, Australia had its first case.
As you will be now aware, the first confirmed positive case has now been detected in Australia.
And that was a man who had flown to Melbourne from China.
On flight CZ321 from Guangzhou, and he was well when he arrived but developed an illness during last week and is currently in a stable condition under isolation in a hospital in Melbourne. As we indicated.
Okay, so by the end of January, we have more than 200 people dead of COVID-19. Cases confirmed in 22 other countries and regions outside China. What happens next?
I'm declaring a public health emergency of international concern over the global outbreak of novel coronavirus.
On the 30th of January, the World Health Organization responded to what was going on with the virus and they declared a public health emergency of international concern.
The main reason for this declaration is not because of what is happening in China, but because of what is happening in other countries. Our greatest concern is the potential for the virus to spread to countries with weaker health systems and which are ill prepared to deal with it.
Effectively, that's a global health emergency declaration, and it gives it gave the WHO greater powers to respond.
Let me be clear. This declaration is not a vote of no confidence in China. On the contrary, WHO continues to have a confidence in China's capacity to control the outbreak. I'll repeat this. Let me be clear.
Do we know much about how it's spread and what the symptoms are?
Yes, we do. Look, I think it's important to remember that for most people, a COVID-19 infection is going to be mild. You might feel like you've got a cold or a bit like you would with a normal flu. We know that people with pre-existing medical conditions are more at risk and people who are older. In the most severe cases, people can die from organ failure, including cardiac arrest.
Are there any treatments for this virus?
At the moment, there isn't any treatment for a virus. It's mostly responding to the symptoms of the patients. Those people who've got a fever and a cough, they can probably have, you know, the usual treatments you would have for a cold. Antibiotics don't work because it's a virus. We've heard this week that they think that a vaccine may be up to 18 months away. So in that time period, it's really going to be a case of managing the virus. We know that there are trials going on in China of different drugs, but you can't just magic up a treatment for a virus. It's going to take time because they want whatever treatment they release, they want it to be effective.
So is this more serious than, say, for example, the last big threat we faced was SARS, or less serious?
Look, I think what we can certainly say is the spread of this virus has been much more rapid. At the moment, we believe that the mortality rate of this virus is around 2 to 2.5%. So that effectively means for every 100 people who might be infected, around 2 people might die.
And how does that compare to things like the flu?
Well, if you look at influenza, the death rate for that is around 1%. The death rate, as I said, for COVID-19, we believe is 2 to 2.5%, although we have limited data because the virus has only been identified for a limited amount of time. In Wuhan, we believe that the fatality rate is around 4%. And I think until we get some more longitudinal data, it's going to be hard to give it exact answers on that. But if you compare it to the two other big coronavirus events, the SARS epidemic, that had a death rate of around 10%, and the MERS virus, that had a much higher death rate, in fact, of around 35%. So at the moment, it's a lot lower than those, but what we also know is the spread appears to be much faster than SARS.
The coronavirus is testing Wuhan to its limits. Hospitals in the city are overwhelmed. Many report shortages of manpower and protective gear.
So what has the international community been saying about China's response?
Look, I think there's been a lot of praise. China, once they started to know what the potential for the virus was, they did act very quickly.
The race is on to complete two temporary hospitals for coronavirus patients, Huo Shenshan and Lei Shenshan, as fast as possible. More than 1,000 workers are toiling around the clock to ensure 1,000 beds in Huo Shenshan Hospital are ready in less than a week.
They've done a lot of things which in other countries might seem incredible. They built two massive hospitals in the space of 10 days. They've converted convention centres to house patients who are affected by the virus. So I think people have given China praise for that. There are questions that are being asked about the length of time that it took to find out that there was a virus.
This is the man who warned the world when authorities stayed silent. Li Wenliang told others in December of a new virus similar to SARS, the outbreak that killed hundreds in the early 2000s. Authorities punished him for speaking out.
We know last week one of the doctors who had originally talked about the threat of this virus in December, he died of the virus.
He was such a nice person, but still didn't pull through. And those left don't dare to speak out.
He showed a responsible attitude towards society. He's honest and faithful.
And there was an outpouring on Chinese social media in support of him. And I think general concern that they thought that a whistleblower who'd said there really is a problem here had been silenced. So while, yes, they have taken a whole lot of steps to try and contain the virus inside China, there seems to be, I hesitate to use the word unprecedented, but a significant amount of concern inside China about how much information is being publicised about the virus.
Next, how is Australia responding?
So given the level of concern about this, I was asked to have a look into what the experts, what the epidemiologists say, how we've been responding.
Selena Ribeiro is a freelance reporter for Guardian Australia.
They were broadly supportive. They thought Australia had generally had a very robust response, but not that it was without room for improvement.
Steps we're taking today are being taken on the basis of the medical advice that we are receiving. That is, firstly, Dr. Murphy will go into more detail on this, we're releasing 1 million masks from the stockpile through the PHN network and also...
So what has been the Australian response?
So as the disease progressed on January 29...
We have taken a decision this morning to prepare a plan for an operation to provide some assisted departures.
Scott Morrison announced that the Australian government would try and evacuate isolated, vulnerable Australians trapped in China as a result of the outbreak.
And we are moving very, very swiftly to ensure that we can put this plan together and put the operation together.
Those, that first evacuation was to Christmas Island, the detention facility there.
The 747 flying Australians out of Wuhan has close to 270 passengers, crew and health staff on board. It's not known if anyone on the flight has the coronavirus, so minimising the risk of infection is the priority.
That attracted some criticism, but Home Affairs Minister Peter Dutton defended those plans.
It's not easy to find a facility. There's been some criticism this morning about Christmas Island, but I think Christmas Island is a very different facility than what people imagined in their minds from 10 years or so ago.
Arguing that it was the only facility of its kind that could hold that many people, which was around 600 people.
Well, I can't clear out a hospital in Sydney or Melbourne to isolate people, and some people will take a decision to stay where they are because perhaps they've been there for a long period of time, even if they are Australian citizens, they'll have family there.
A few days later on February 1st.
Yeah, good evening to you, Rob. Well, this is the most serious and dramatic escalation of this crisis from the Prime Minister this afternoon, announced just within the last hour or so, as you say, effectively.
The Australian government announced that foreign nationals from mainland China would not be allowed into Australia.
All but our own citizens will be allowed into the country and our territories. And
that accepted Australian citizens, permanent residents and their family and guardians.
The travel advice has been upgraded to reconsider all travel to China.
They then also raised the travel warning to the highest level for warning that Australians should avoid travel to China.
The entire nation. There is a package of information following the decision we took on Monday, which is going out to all...
And were people coming from mainland China asked to quarantine themselves?
The government's initial response, given the high volume of people movement between Australia and China, has been containment, has been to shut the gates. The government has asked people arriving from mainland China towards the latter part of the outbreak to self-isolate for 14 days from the time that they left mainland China.
And what do public health experts say about this response?
The public health academics I've been speaking to have said that is an appropriate response because what containment does is, even if it does not prevent an ultimate outbreak, it buys Australia critical time before it is in the community to mount and prepare for its response should it actually get into the wider community. broadly speaking, they've been quite positive, and they acknowledge that in the absence of evidence in a situation that's changing rapidly, that making public health decisions is quite hard. However, there are slippages and there is room for improvement.
So what can we do better?
What they've told me is that the problem lies in our federated system. So we've got states and territories each having responsibility for health. And while there is a level of coordination from the central federal government, it's very much networked and it comes up in the time of a crisis. Now, what the Australian Society for Infectious Diseases wants to see is a permanent body that can monitor and coordinate responses to the threat of pandemic. That would be able to mobilise staff and existing networks to identify disease, issue public health messages, and it would be a more central body that could coordinate the response.
And from the experts you talked to, do they think Australia's hospitals can cope?
Well, that is always the question because they just don't know what we're dealing with, how big it could be. So hospitals come under significant strain in the winter months anyway, and COVID-19 in the Northern Hemisphere is coinciding with that flu season that happens over winter. And if you think about last year, we had a flu season which in Australia took more than 250 lives, infected over 100,000 people, which strains hospitals. And then to add on to that the layer of COVID-19 as a potential threat, and it is unlikely we'd have a vaccine or antiviral by our own flu season, then that is going to strain our hospital systems.
And does Australia have a plan if something like this happens?
So the plan that we've got in place, the AMPI, as it's called, the Australian Health Management Plan for Pandemic Influenza, has been around for some years. And for many hospitals, they brought a lot of those pandemic measures in during the swine flu of 2009. So they had their fever clinics and so on. And Professor Alan Cheng, who is the incoming president of the Australasian Society for Infectious Diseases, said that actually those measures meant that probably the result of that outbreak wasn't as bad as it could be.
So this national pandemic plan was tested during the swine flu in 2009, but hasn't really been tested since then. Does that mean we don't really know if we're ready?
No, and I think that is why the response is how it has been, because the element of unknown is unpredictable. So the highest response is necessary.
This week, the WHO chief has talked about the potential for social, political and economic upheaval as a result of this virus. And he said that the consequences were potentially more significant than a terrorist attack. What he actually meant by that, I think, is that the virus has the potential to have far-reaching consequences in all societies, and particularly in societies which have not particularly well-developed health systems because of their ability to treat people who fall ill. So I think what he's saying is that if we don't get on top of containing this virus, then it may have the potential to really disrupt communities in a very broad sense.
But Ali, what about you and me here in Australia? Should we be concerned?
Look, I don't think so at the moment. I mean, the current advice is that you don't need to wear a face mask. You shouldn't be worried about going to shopping centres. That advice is coming from some of the most senior medical people in the country. Personally, I've been immersed in this story for 3 weeks and I haven't changed anything I'm doing or anything that my children are doing. They're going to school as normal. Nobody's wearing a face mask. At the moment, we know that in Australia, there are only 15 confirmed infections. So I think we need to listen to what the authorities are saying and we just need to get on with our lives. And if the medical advice changes, then we should change too. But at the moment, I'm not concerned for my own personal health or safety.
Many of these passengers at the Beijing West Railway Station are thinking of the coronavirus.
I don't think this virus has been properly controlled. I just came back to China. I read a lot of news on the internet. I'm not very satisfied with how the government prevented and controlled the disease. I'm very afraid of getting infected.
I am really afraid of...
What's happening in Wuhan now?
Well, Wuhan is still under lockdown, which basically means people are being told to stay in their apartments.
And those inside the city of Wuhan are becoming more frustrated because medical supplies are running short and hospitals are short-staffed.
To try and prevent the spread. I mean, this really is the epicenter of sort of 1,100 or so deaths we've had from the virus so far. About 1,000 of them have been in Wuhan. So there's understandably a lot of fear and concern from the people who live there.
Hello, Marco.
Hi, ni hao.
Ni hao. This is Naaman. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Yeah, thank you for taking the time out to speak to me.
Okay. 目前我们现在需要解决的是大家的
The main problem now is still like self-protection, stay at home and try to avoid to get contact with the virus.
And I think that's something that we really have to bear in mind, that this is a really difficult situation for the people who are living in that city.
So there are someone who's currently in the rural areas of Hubei. The parents are PR, but their children was born in Australia, so it's an Australian citizen. Under the arrangement, only the child can be evacuated, but not the parents.
There have been some very, I found, moving images come out of that city over the last 10 days. One was of a man who had, we believe, died from the virus and was lying dead in the street, and it took some time for the authorities to come. And I saw another image off a video this week, which I thought was very telling, which was an elderly woman walking with her shopping trolley down an empty street in Wuhan trying to find a shop that was open. So we know that many shops are closed. We know that people are having to find other ways of getting food to feed their families, but the elderly are particularly vulnerable, not only because they may not be able to walk so far if shops close to them are closed, but also they're incredibly vulnerable. So there's a lot of fear.
There are elderly and children, and we also have a pregnant woman. So they are facing, they probably are facing the problems of running out of medications or like formula, milk, powder, that kind of thing, because they probably didn't plan to stay for this long.
You know, so much in China is state controlled, media is state controlled, messaging is state controlled. And perhaps in a society like that, the quid pro quo is that the state will look after you. If the sort of state decides how things work, the state will look after you. And in a public health emergency like this, it's pretty clear that the state is not looking after everybody. And that's why it's generated so much anger.
At the time of recording, the WHO had said that it was referring to both the virus itself and the disease it caused as COVID-19. It has since updated its advice and now says the virus is officially called 2019-nCoV and the disease it causes is COVID-19. This episode of Full Story was produced by Ellen Leibeater, Joe Koning and Jake Morecambe. Our executive producer is Miles Martignoni. Thanks to Alison Rourke and Selena Ribeiro for their time and their precise reporting. And thanks to Naaman Zhou, who contributed his interviews with people in Wuhan. I'm Gabrielle Jackson, filling in for Laura Murphy-Oates while she jaunts off to Japan. You can read more reporting on COVID-19 with daily updates, explainers, Q&As and more at theguardian.com. Thanks for listening. If you listen on an app that has ratings or reviews, we'd really love to know what you think. That's it for today. See you next week.